Welcome to the On The Rise podcast with your host, Tanner Lewis of Rise Music Group. We talk to top professionals in the music business today, as well as the rising stars of tomorrow. Let's hop into this episode of On The Rise.
This episode is presented by our friends over at Hilo Digital Marketing. That's H-I-L-L-O. These guys have been working with me on a few projects for some of my management clients. We've been personally working with Hallie Ferguson over there. She's doing a fantastic job. If you're looking for any help with your digital marketing, social media, branding, anything like that, want somebody to take a little bit of the tedious work off your plate, definitely hit those guys up. Their email is info@hilodigital.com. Or you can check them out at hilodigital.com. Again, that's H-I-L-L-O. Let's hop into this episode.
All right. Welcome to On The Rise. I'm here with my special guest this week, Brendan Anthony from the Texas Music Office. How's it going, Brendan?
It's going well. Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Good. Yeah, good to catch up, man. It's been a little bit. I was trying to think, when was the last time we got together? It might have been ACL a few years back or something. It's been a long time.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I really enjoyed what you've done with the podcast in the meantime. It's really great. I've been listening to the episodes. I just finished John Dixon's, and you did a great job with it, man. You should be really proud of that.
Very cool. I appreciate you listening. It's been fun, man. As you know, like when I first moved back from Nashville to Austin, I was pretty new in the music business and knew a bunch of people in Nashville, but I didn't know a lot of people in the Texas scene, and figured this would be a good way to provide some value to young artists and young business professionals, as well as kind of, you know, get out there and network a little bit and get to meet a bunch of cool people doing good work. So it's been fun.
Great. Well, that's a good reason to do it. I got to say, your podcast setup and location isn't bad. I don't know if folks probably won't be able to see this, but Tanner's sitting in front of a pretty picturesque lake view right now. It's pretty jealousy inducing.
It's not too bad. It's this will be my second Zoom interview, so I've been kind of holding out, you know, doing everything in person, and then everything hit for those of you listening well into the future. We're still in coronavirus times right now,
right?
It's been good not having to drive anywhere, because I do live, you know, in Lago Vista, which is quite the haul from most of the business professionals downtown and in Nashville and that type of thing. But the one downside to doing podcasts at my house is that I've found my dogs absolutely hate them.
So I was, a lot of unwanted participation, I'm sure.
Yeah, I was talking with Mitch Ballard. We just put out his podcast today, and I was talking to him last week, and my dogs are just, as soon as you hop on the podcast, they're tearing up dog beds, they're jumping on each other. It's a whole bad situation for podcasts. but anyway, man, I know, you know, me and you've got a chance to catch up a little bit in the past and kind of get familiar with each other, but I would like to kind of give those in the audience who aren't as familiar with you and what you do and kind of where you come from a brief introduction. So if you could give a quick little overview of who you are, what you do, and how you got here.
Yeah, gosh. Great question. I hope the answer isn't too long. At this point, in 2020, when we were recording this, yeah, I've been involved with recording and touring, e-commerce, artist relations, economic development, and nearly every facet of the music industry since the mid-90s. So I'd say, you know, my involvement with music goes back to my earliest childhood days when I began playing classical violin. My parents insisted that my brother and I take an instrument, and they started me on classical violin when I was really young, about the same age as my daughter now, around 4 years old. And so violin's been a part of my life this whole time. Music and instruments have been a part of my life this whole time. I started playing music that wasn't classical music probably 95, around the end of my high school run to date myself quite a bit, but found some friends who were interested in doing that as well. And, you know, we did what you do. We formed cover bands. We jammed together. We played. And that carried on through college. I went to Texas A&M. And one of the guys that I knew from high school and I, Justin Pollard, started a cover band with his dad and some older guys from college, and we did whatever was on the country radio at the time, and then some country classic type stuff. So I learned how to play violin with a kind of a country band. I wouldn't insult fiddle players by calling myself one, but I learned to play violin with a country band then. And then during that time at A&M, I met Roger Krieger, who had just come back to start focusing on writing songs. And I met Corey Morrow, who'd made a record and was starting to try to figure out how to play in front of people. And then I met Pat Green in pretty rapid succession. So started playing open mics with Roger Krieger and Brian in College Station. Started playing the odd show with Corey Morrow back then too, around 96. And then I met Pat the fall, I believe, of my sophomore year of college. And eventually that led to a 15-year touring run with Pat Green, and then several dozen records. I've completely lost count with Texas Country Guys, mostly produced at that time by Lloyd Maines, which was a lot of fun. So I made some pretty formative relationships then. Got a buddy here.
Very cool.
Anderson, can you say hi? I'm talking to my friend Tanner right now on a podcast, and I'm going to come out and hang out with you as soon as I'm done, okay? All right. Good. I'll see you in a minute.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, to sum up the early days, I switched from playing classical violin to violin in country cover bands, and then moved on to some Texas folks who I met very early in their careers, if they could even call them careers at that point, started recording with them and playing with them and toured all over the place. So Pat, of course, still has a very successful, well, they all do, but Pat in particular had a very successful career as an independent singer-songwriter with a touring band, and I was proud to work with him, and that took me all over the place. In 2010, I left Pat's band and left touring altogether to help start a company called, eventually became known as One Live Media. It's called Music One Live at the beginning. We specialized in some ticketing for venues around the state. We worked with Billy Bob's and several others, and then that moved into, through some relationships we had, to e-commerce. Very rapidly we scaled up into an e-commerce company. I handled artist relationships, fulfillment logistics for artists like Beyonce, Willie Nelson, several others. So I oversaw those relationships with those artists and their teams. And then I helped our company set up and run fulfillment warehouses in California, in LA, Dallas, and one in Heathrow in London. And then our headquarters were in Austin. So we were very busy. That was full startup world. That was 5 years of building that company, which is still going on now. But I left in 2015 when I was appointed by then elected, newly elected Governor Greg Abbott to serve in economic development and tourism by heading up the Texas Music Office. So in a brief nutshell, I come from the creative side of the music industry in Texas, playing with Texas singer-songwriters that several people know about, and then moved into the tech and e-commerce side. And then now I work daily with, hundreds of people and constituents in the music industry, and my role is director of the Texas Music Office. So that's my brief background, and happy to answer any questions about that.
Very cool. Yeah, so I mean, I was definitely familiar with your touring background and kind of how you got into the Texas Music Office, but I didn't know a whole lot about the e-com world and the tech world that you came from. What was the specific product and stuff that y'all were working with there?
We took artists' websites, and we were helping them capitalize on that rapidly expanding world of on-demand and digital marketplace. So we would work with them as they develop products to sell online, and then we would build the stores and the shopping platforms, the online shopping platforms, into their websites for them. So we provided that server capability and that technical know-how to build sites that were white labeled onto their sites, and then we would absorb all their product, all their inventory into our various warehouses and fulfill those. It was really challenging. I mean, that's a world that is very challenging and fast paced. It never stops, especially with artists like Beyonce, who are in global demand and constantly have new product. And it was just a real learning experience, I mean, to say the least.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, it's so cool how how many different facets come into the industry, especially when you get to working with artists at that magnitude. Yeah, I told you I had Mitch Ballard on the other day, and we got to talking about his background in lighting for tours and concerts, and kind of working the lighting world, but working with the pop and hip hop industry, and just amazing how many people it takes to make this world of music go round.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's a real ecosystem around every artist, especially every successful artist that's a name brand or a household name. The sheer amount of people working nearly around the clock to make that happen.
Most definitely.
Can't be overstated.
Definitely. So then you get brought on to be the director of the Texas Music Office. You were, I assume, the only person at the Texas Music Office for a while, right? It was a new organization at that time when you got brought in?
No, actually, the office just celebrated its 30-year anniversary.
Okay.
So there was an executive director who'd been there since 90 or 91 when it was created, and he had been the only serving director until I was appointed. So he had two office staff whom I inherited, and we've just added a third as our role has expanded under my direction. But it's an office that was created under Governor Clemens, and Governor Ann Richards moved it into the office of the governor, which is very safe and protected place for an agency to be because it falls underneath the governor's trusteed programs. Those are hard to eliminate, frankly. And so that's given it a lot of cover and support. And what an office like mine can do with the support of the chief executive of the state is not limitless, but certainly it has a lot of potential. So when I was appointed in 15, you know, some of my asks included, some freedom to choose the agenda, which of course was granted, but then, you know, a pledge of real support for the office and what I thought it could do.
Yeah, most definitely. And so let's talk about a few of those new initiatives that you've brought on, a few that you're most passionate about, and then, I'll share a few of my favorites.
Oh, great. Thanks. I saw the office when I took over leadership of it as an interesting agency. I'll say that for certain. It's the only one of its kind in the country that functions the way it does. So it's got some real history to it. It's got some name association to it that, you know, 25 years will create. But I did see it as behind the times for the year that I took it over. It essentially served as a clearinghouse, as only a clearinghouse for information about the music industry in the state. For many years, some of the listeners might be familiar with the book it published every year. It was shipped out to agencies and people working to form relationships in the state. So it was essentially a white pages that it would send out every year. But in this day and age of digital interconnection and interconnectivity, that was simply a concept that was far behind the times. The book itself was eliminated in 2008, I believe, so it no longer served that purpose. The website itself was not regularly edited or tremendously accurate. And as an overlying general concept, Google was available now. So if you needed to go find information about a music business, why not just Google it? Why come to us to find data that may be out of date? So I saw it as an agency that had some tremendous potential, but wasn't necessarily realizing that potential. So I tried to spend some time thinking about what those avenues for expansion could be. We don't have don't have infinite resources. We don't have infinite human capital at the office. There's just a few of us. So what would best serve the agency. You know, what could we spend our time on that would best serve our constituents? I certainly wanted to make the database more accurate so that people could actually use it and get some good out of it. So we worked very hard to make that happen. But I noticed a central problem that I thought needed to be solved, and I knew it would take a long time to solve it. So the agency itself is a statewide agency. It housed in Austin. But for a time, I felt like it had gotten very, very focused on Austin and what was going on in that city only, and had neglected the rest of the state. And so I set about trying to figure out a program that would make us a more interconnected and responsive state agency. So to me, that meant creating a group of satellite offices and communities large and small around the state that wouldn't necessarily report to us, but would be part of a community that shared ideas and shared best practices. But we also wanted to set the threshold for membership in that program fairly high. So we didn't want to drive around the state handing out certificates saying you were part of the group and then ask nothing of you, or make them so easy to get that everyone had one and the program meant relatively little. So we created the Music Friendly Communities program after a lot of research done by much smarter people than I. And we asked cities to create an office or liaison to mirror my position, to create an advisory board to report to that person, to create a database similar to ours that mirrored ours, that reflected data about the stakeholders in that community. And then we would certify them. But they've got to hold a workshop. They've got to invite. We talk to them once a month about the programs they're creating. And we share that data through a legal mechanism, a memoranda of understanding created by our general counsel that says that they will share information with us at various points of the year through their database. So we created a pretty strong interconnected network of cities. We're working our way to having 20 of those on board this year. So it's a lot of work to get communities through that. Well, to first get them aware of the program, which we've largely solved now. At the very beginning, at the outset, when you're pitching a brand new idea to a city, it's very difficult. But Fort Worth was our first community certified in 2017, and then we'll have 20 on board by the end of this year. That's our goal, even during these times, and we'll accomplish that. So we've created a one-of-a-kind, interconnected network of music-friendly communities in the state.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And kind of what's, not to jump in and interrupt you, but I mean, the impact of them being a part of this music-friendly community program, you know, I've seen a lot of impact in cities like Fort Worth and Lyndale, mm-hmm. and a few others that y'all have worked with. You know, prior to the COVID world, you were seeing those communities really start fostering creativity and fostering new venues and really providing a lot of opportunities to musicians around the state.
Yeah, that's generally what we hope to accomplish through the program. They're all going to do it in different ways. They're all different places. They're all run by different people. But generally, the idea is that we form a listening post within city government to help industry professionals navigate the intricacies of city government. So that's an invaluable service we can provide. And then we encourage communities to listen to their advisory boards, create regular networking opportunities so they can understand the needs of the stakeholders and react to them. And you've seen some really great things come out of communities. Most all communities have done something interesting with their programs up to this point, given enough time. You know, what we've shifted to today, and we've had a statewide call last week of all our liaisons and prospective members right now, is what we've shifted to is focusing awareness on how important these agencies, these offices and liaisons are going to be in the rebuild portion of our industry whenever that can begin. We haven't reached that point yet. We haven't seen the total toll that this crisis is going to inflict on the music industry in the state or the country. But when we do understand it, when we feel like we're started to be pointed back in a positive direction, it's my thought that these organizations are going to be very, very important. So we've started that conversation so that people can seed in their minds how big the problem is and how they might be useful to their constituents. So hopefully it will serve a recovery type role too in the months and years going forward.
Yeah, most definitely. And I mean, even on the front end of this thing, you know, there was a lot of resources that y'all worked hard on putting out, you know, from the Music Cares information, and there was different email newsletters and stuff on socials that you know, even within my roster of management clients, we utilized. Good. And made sure that the artists were aware of these resources, and some of them have definitely reaped the benefits. Well, so I appreciate y'all taking that time.
Well, that's an important role, and let me speak to that for just a second too. So I feel like we've changed several things at the office. So I highlighted the Music Friendly Communities program and how important I think that is, and the ongoing efforts there. Another thing I noticed when I came into Texas Music Office in 2015 and began to inventory its current capabilities was that it had relatively no outreach in any appreciable way. That is not an effective way to message. The branding was off, if not non-existent. So we rebranded the office. People might recognize the Texas Music Office, you know, logo we created that we've stuck on everything, because I think it's important to know where their information's coming from, and a logo is very, very important in that effort. But we created a pretty broad-based and multi-channeled outreach program through social media that we were given permission for the first time to utilize by the governor's executive staff and their press office. And then we created that newsletter that you referenced. So, you know, from absolutely no social presence or social outreach to the kind of interactivity we have with industry professionals around the state and around the country now, through the newsletter and the social channels, you know, we've changed the way that the Texas Music Office positions itself on issues, positions itself in the lives of creators by highlighting their efforts. And we are able, through a really robust social media campaign, to share those kind of resources that you referenced with people when the time is necessary to do so. If we didn't have those tools at our disposal right now, we'd very much be on an island asking people to come to us for information. And that's not how proactive companies function. That's not how proactive artists function. And that's certainly not how state agencies should function, in my opinion. And as director, that's what matters. So, you know, the idea that right now, if we have, you know, connections to Texas Workforce Commission to share with people, or we have updates about the CARES Act, or we have updates about SBA and PPP loans that we can share with industry professionals, we can reach a lot of people today that we couldn't have reached 5 years ago.
Most definitely.
I think that does change people's lives if you can share information with them that helps them do their job, or in this case, stay afloat.
Yeah, and I mean, so many of these resources are time sensitive, and
yeah,
you know, there's a lot of them that may not even be Texas resources; might be national organizations that are looking to help people in the music business or on the artist side, or you know, creators of any kind, whatever that might be, and being able to have access to those on the front end and having somebody proactively, you know, out there making sure that the information is compiled and accurate definitely helps Texas artists get in on the ball a little bit earlier than they would have been otherwise.
Yeah, and I'm proud to say now when people ask me what we do or how we can help, you know, one of the first things I can say and really feel like I'll have an impact is, well, you should really follow our newsletter. You should really follow our social channels. You know, that's going to tell you more than I'm going to be able to tell you in 30 seconds about what it is we do at Texas Music Office. Because now, today, we're truly a statewide agency that focuses on a ton of different issues. But if you want to see a daily accounting, or if you want to see a monthly accounting of what we do, what we've done, and what we're focused on, subscribe to the newsletter and follow the social channels, and that will tell you. And if you're looking for resources that will help you get through a crisis like this, or in normal times, if you're looking to connect with agency professionals, industry professionals, sorry, who can help you move your career forward, follow the socials, follow the newsletter, subscribe to the newsletter, and check in on the website for updates. You know, that's going to be a lot more effective than me giving a presentation, which will essentially be what I'll have to do to answer the question fully. So, you know, I'm proud to say that those pieces of information and those channels and avenues for information are created now and work in a way that makes sense to people and can help people. And that drives a tremendous amount of traffic back to us now. You know, I can't overstate how proud I am of the Texas Music Office staff, Mark Fort, Steve Ray, and Chip Adams, for the amount of work they've done personally to connect with people right now during this time who are trying to find ways to survive this. But they do that during normal times as well. They are, we all are listed prominently on the website and can be connected with through the website. And so we answer one-on-one questions all day, every day from people who now know about us, first of all, and try to find ways to utilize our services. And you know, one of the main services we can offer is connection to resources and connectivity to the industry at large. So I'm really proud of that role. I don't feel like we're someone you've got to actively search for to find. We're pretty easy to find now. And we try to be pretty present on, you know, networks that people use in this modern day and age to find out information and connect with one another.
Yeah, and for our audience, we'll list it in the show notes to where to subscribe to the email newsletter, and then as well find y'all on socials. But what is that handle on most socials for y'all?
It's a little bit of a blend between Texas spelled out, Texas Music Office, or TX Music Office, which is Twitter, I believe, and Instagram. And then you can find all of those at the website at texasmusicoffice.com. So you can search that on Google, and you can find our URL pretty easy.
Definitely. We'll put a link there. And so you mentioned how easy y'all are to contact via the website. One of my favorite resources that y'all have been working on a lot, I know, since we first met, is the directory section of the website. And that includes, I mean, you can find management companies, you can find musicians, you can find radio stations, promoters, really any sector of the industry that you're looking to connect with. And I think that's a valuable resource that's probably not known about for a lot of the artists that are just getting started.
Yeah, and look, that takes me to another silo of information I can talk about real quick about the TMO. So yeah, we're an unparalleled resource. Information resource. The Texas Music Industry Database hosts over 15,000 listings of industry professionals working in the state. Why is that important? It's really the only one of its kind that hosts that kind of information. But it's also important in terms of what it allows our office to do. So we can tell a very detailed story about what's happening in the music industry in Texas. We are supposed to be the experts about what's going on in the state economically, and we can use that Texas Music Industry Database to tell that story. There was a national trade organization, for example, last year that listed the 50 states of Texas music and the music industry's contributions statewide, and we were the only state that contributed our own data to that study.
Very cool.
Early on in this process, when I talked about inventorying capabilities and asking for support from executive leadership to do a better job, I had to use numbers to make sure that that was gonna happen. And so one of the first things we did was we worked very hard to try to bring the accuracy of the Texas Music Industry Database up to an acceptable level of plus minus. So we know now today that it lives in the mid 90s of accuracy percentage, up from the 70s. And it's hard to keep it that accurate with that many listings. But as much effort is made to edit bad data as there is to add new data. In the past, our performance measures as an office were too heavily tied to adding new data, and we had to change that. I saw that as something that needed to be fixed. Our data should not be evidence of performance. Our data should be data, and it should be reflective of what's actually happening in the state. So we used that data and we contracted with an outside economist to help us create our first Texas Music Industry Economic Impact Study. We did that in 2015. In November, I presented that to Governor Abbott in a key cross-section of top-end industry executives in the state. I presented those numbers at the governor's mansion to him with the help of our economist and talked through what that meant. And then I asked those industry professionals if they agreed with that and what we could do to be a more effective agency for companies like theirs in the state. With their input, we started these various different programs that I'll outline, a couple of which I already have. But it was the numbers, it was the economic impact numbers that allowed us to talk about the music industry alongside other important industries and contributors to the Texas tax base in a way that hadn't been done before. Without a blind taste test, simply put, our executive leadership would look at us as the cool, fun music agency. And that would only serve to continue the true notion that music is solely a cultural contributor to our state. It is. It's one of the most important things we do to establish a Texas identity is to create the music we have for generations. But we also contribute almost $400 million to the tax base every year, and we put 100,000 plus people to work daily, not hobbyists, daily. And they create billions of dollars worth of earnings, and they put thousands and thousands of people to work. So until we could talk about the music industry in the state as an economic engine and put real numbers to that, we would not be having the full conversation. And we would probably not get the sort of support we have from Governor Abbott now that we have since we presented that study to him. And the Texas Music Industry Database that you referenced made all that possible. So we work very hard to keep that accurate. We ask the music-friendly communities to help us keep it accurate by updating theirs and sharing so we can overwrite and make sure that we have data that is representative of what's actually happening in Dallas and Austin and San Antonio and these other places so we can keep doing that better job. And we release new updated versions of that economic impact study every 2 years in preparation for the Texas legislative session that meets every 2 years on odd years.
Right, and so that's while we're on the economic impact of the office and that type of thing, you've also seen a lot of large companies coming into Texas that are music based. TuneCore, BMI, two good examples mm-hmm. of two large companies that have made a concerted effort to put a presence here in Austin and in Texas at large. Does the office, Texas Music Office, have an impact on programs and those companies being brought this direction?
Yeah. So that brings me to another agenda point that the Music Office created after I came in 15. I thought rightly so. The governor moved. There's a big org chart of agencies within the Office of the Governor, right? I'm talking with my hands. I'm sorry. So there's a big org chart that exists under the Office of the Governor. We were moved, the Texas Music Office was moved concurrently with my appointment to the Economic Development Tourism team. And that was a very important shift for us. That signaled that we would not simply be a standalone agency focused on the music industry. We should be involved. It signaled that we should be involved in economic development. That was a relatively new role for the office. I think it was a new role altogether for the office, frankly. That's my take on it. I see in Texas that we are a tremendous live music creator. We create huge live music events. We spawn artists every generation that create jobs and create a lot of wealth and money by being national or regional touring acts. What we don't do a whole bunch of is actively work to create music industry infrastructure in the state. And so one of my goals was to bring in some marquee, easily recognizable to the industry writ large companies to help us move that effort forward, becoming an industry infrastructure center. Nashville, LA, New York, why not add Austin to that list in more than a symbolic way? And top of my list was a performance rights organization. And I thought that since performance rights organizations like BMI and ASCAP and CSAC to a somewhat lesser extent served such an important role in the lives of songwriters from the very earliest time that they began to write, that they are an essential building block to that industry infrastructure landscape. So I went to Nashville in one of my first months of serving as director, and I met with the heads of those, the regional heads of those companies that I thought would be most important here. I met with Jody Williams in Nashville for BMI, for example, and I explained to him my plan. And my plan was to have BMI expand in the form of a permanent office space, a permanent Texas employee who served Texas and the region based out of Texas, based out of Austin. For many, many years, BMI has been a tremendously important partner for Austin, for Texas, for our Texas songwriters. And I thought it was time that they came and did some business here. And so I got my boss into the idea, and slowly over time, we made that happen. And we worked with a private group out of Austin to help make that happen too. They were working on Gary Keller and his team, headed up by the music effort, headed up by Nick Shuley, became very important in that process too. We helped them find office space, and we got the commitment for them to open up that that office here. Those sort of efforts take a long time, and it is not simply as easy as asking a company to do something and then have it happen overnight. A lot of logistics to talk through, a lot of considerations to bear in mind, but we got it done, and BMI is now here, and it sounds like they're here to stay for quite a while, and we're very happy about that. You know, my boss, Governor Abbott, had a lot to do with that. He got personally involved in that effort as well. That's what I meant when I was referencing support from chief executive of the state. He made those phone calls, and he met with those executives from New York and Nashville, and he helped convince them to make that move too. So yes, in answer to your question in a very long and rambling way, those companies are very much on our target list. TuneCore, to their credit, had made that move. Scott Ackerman, who was then CEO, had been very focused on creating regional personal connections with artists who utilize that digital distribution service. And we're thrilled to have Amy Lombardi serving here in that role. And Scott, before he left his role as CEO, was personally involved in making sure that they had the kind of support, and Shelby Kennedy in Nashville had the kind of support, and their office in New Orleans had the kind of support to do what they're doing now, bring people together. But with TuneCore and BMI operating the way they're operating, we're in a much better place than we were a couple years ago, and we'll continue to add to that. My year in 2020 was supposed to have been spent in quarterly trips to DC, New York, and Nashville, where I was spending time with companies that were on the fence about moving to provide them added incentive to make that move. Those plans will have to be put on hold a little bit until we can do in-person meetings. But that conversation is still very much ongoing with companies that I think would be essential to artists' well-being here in the state.
Most definitely. I mean, even from an artist management perspective, you know, just the few that have hopped on board in the little bit of time that I've been back to Texas has made a big impact for me and my artists. You know, just being able to call on somebody that's within an hour drive from you versus hopping on an airplane to Nashville every few weeks. So definitely excited about what y'all are doing. We'll continue to go to Nashville. Obviously there's a lot of value to be provided there as well, but the more infrastructure that we can get in Texas is you know, always a big agenda item for me. So I appreciate you working on it.
I appreciate that. I think there are some things you can do here or should be able to do here, and some things you're not able to do here, right? Just generally. And you know, we will always rely on industry centers that have, you know, more time invested in their build out to move our careers forward. And please understand, in no way am I saying that we shouldn't do business in Nashville or we shouldn't do business in New York or LA. Quite the contrary. I think having strong relationships in those industry centers serve us very, very well. But when an artist is coming up and starting to write and starting to get connected, being able to make those incredibly important personal connections early in their career with someone who lives and works in their home state is invaluable. And so, you know, if we have artists that can stay in Texas for a little while longer and build businesses here and put people to work here and then utilize those things that they can pick and choose from these different places, I think we'll have in several years, I think we'll have a different sort of ecosystem here. And I think it'll be one that'll be better for artists who choose to build their home office in Austin or Texas in general. And so I want to form tighter connections with Nashville. I want to form tighter connections with tech companies, and I want to form tighter connections with groups in New York that do a lot of work for the industry at large. But I would like for them to be able to be based here and make those connections.
Most definitely. So, you know, we didn't have much time to talk before hopping on this Zoom call, but you're setting up these transitions just like we've got a whole little little plan in place here. But yeah. So you hopped into talking about new artists and some resources for them.
Sure.
Maybe my favorite place to scroll around on your website and just kind of, you know, spend a little time thumbing through tabs is the Music Business Guides.
Yeah.
So I think this is, you know, along with the directory section, I think it's one of the most impactful resources for young artists. It's got a wealth of information from licensing to setting up your business to who you need to talk to when you start writing songs to, you know, what makes you ready for management. It's really a good, it's a good 101 course for somebody who's starting their artist career and serious about it. So can you tell me kind of where that section came from?
Yeah, so I mentioned earlier my predecessor who'd been there for several years before I came in. I think a lot of his goal was educating young artists and educating business professionals or you know, aspiring business professionals about what it meant to be a music industry professional. And a lot of credit has to be given to him, Casey Monahan, for setting up those 101 guides that are constantly being updated, obviously, but setting up those guides so that you've got something in black and white to help you think through building your business, getting started. You know, that is a highly trafficked part of the website, like you mentioned. And, you know, a lot of credit goes to, you know, that team in place then who built out those resources for artists. But yeah, they're easy to find. We've worked hard to make the website more easily, more easy to navigate for certain, just to bring it up to modernity somewhat. But, you know, the information there is what's important. Awesome. And yeah, and his a lot of his focus was mentoring and counseling artists, bands, aspiring managers, et cetera, about what it really took to get started and what the rules were, how to understand different general concepts like licensing and copyright and that sort of thing. So that information still exists on the site. It's being updated. And yeah, that's a tremendous service for people. And you know, the bottom line about all this info on our site is that it's free and it's available to the public and we don't charge anything for it. And we don't charge consulting fees when, in the good old days, just a few months ago, people could call and make an appointment and come up and sit and talk with us about what it meant.
Right.
And to talk through ideas they had and, you know, get some real feedback from people who'd been through it and have spent their whole careers living and working in it.
Yeah. So, and I mean, your office has always been so, so great and open to me after, moving back here. And I appreciate that. And I'm sure you'd treat any other person the same, but you know, whether that meant connecting with the film office. I know we've done some stuff in the past and just being an open resource for any questions I've had while building my management company here in Austin.
Well, good. I'm glad you think so. And yeah, that while we're not able to do that today in the office physically, I think everyone understands that given the time we're taping this. But, you know, I alluded earlier to the fact that we're easy to find on the site. Myself or any one of the Texas Music Office employees field questions daily about, you know, how do I apply to the Secretary of State for, you know, this type of certificate, or, you know, how do I start my company? Who's best to talk to when I'm starting to write songs? Who's available to distribute my stuff? How does that work? What do the rates look like? And, you know, that's general information that seems, you know, that seems very 101, like you said, but that's some of the most important decisions you're going to make early on, and having at least some guidance at the beginning so you don't make missteps is really important. And we're here to help. I mean, that's something we're definitely here to help on.
Sure. So the last thing that I kind of want to touch on is something that's probably more rapid changing than anything in the times right now. Minus live gigs, how is the Texas Music Office helping in the networking portion of the music business? I know we've talked in the past about a few different kind of mentoring programs that are available, maybe not directly under the music office, but that may be helpful for people to be aware of.
Yeah, I mean, one of our central roles can always be to connect people to other people. You know, that's, you know, all of us who work at the TMO have, you know, decades-long Rolodexes now at this point. We know people who have done anything under the sun in the industry. So, you know, between the raw information available on the Texas Music Industry Database and our institutional knowledge about those people and who they are, where they are, and what they've done, you know, that's an invaluable combination. So, you know, we connect people with other people all the time for purposes, any purpose under the sun. And then, you know, as these different companies we talked about earlier, say BMI and TuneCore in this example, or Sound Exchange, whom we brought down extensively to work and connect, you know, we can send people to networking opportunities that they're now thankfully creating on their own over the past several months and years. And then we can send people to their music-friendly community liaisons who are doing the same thing in communities around the state and helping form up these microcosm, you know, connecting networking groups in communities all over the place now. So, you know, one of the greatest things about our office with the Music Friendly Communities program built out and being built out daily is that, you know, I can tell you exactly who to go talk to in any one of these cities and others who haven't made it all the way through the program yet. I got a pretty good idea of who can do what in those places, and you know, you can make your own decisions about how you proceed, but you know, I can give you a one-stop shop to go figure out who to talk to in El Paso or San Antonio or the Rio Grande Valley or Houston or Dallas or wherever else. I mean, we're a statewide interconnected agency at this point. So we help connect people to people. We help connect people to information. We help connect people to resources. And we help people connect to their communities where they're living and working.
Very cool. Well, I appreciate you taking some time with me. Hopefully we don't get your email list too flooded with questions, but I do hope we've provided some valuable resources to whether it be young business professionals or young artists that they can go to the Texas Music Office and find out a little bit more about what they're looking for.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it. You know, one thing that I think gets lost because I've you know, for 5 years plus now, having done this job in a sort of bureaucratic environment focused on economic development. I mean, these are terms and concepts that frankly don't apply much to the daily lives of you know, industry professionals, people who are starting to write songs, people who are touring. You know, but one thing I'll say is that I come at those concepts, I come at those efforts through the eyes and through the lens of someone who's lived through that and made every penny I've ever made based out of Texas, creating music in Texas, living that lifestyle, living on a bus, living in a van, playing on stages all over the state and around the country and around the world. I know what it takes to become a touring musician, play in successful bands, play in not so successful bands, you know, make records for big budgets and tiny budgets. And, you know, I've spent my whole life, adult life, living that life. The position I hold now lets me look at the industry from a different place. I've got a different perspective on it now. It's much, much more, you know, bird's eye view or 30,000 foot. You know, I see a lot of things happening every day because I'm not in the trenches focused solely on making my next paycheck as a fiddle player. I understand this place. I understand Texas. I understand how important music is and the music industry is to so many people. And the guys at the office do too. They've all played. They've all worked in the music business in one way, shape, or form. And they get it. And I think that needs to be expressed, is that we're not just a state agency full of bureaucrats who think music's cool and are checking boxes. You know, we understand that this is a lifestyle you've got to commit to, and this is a lifestyle you've got to do right. And it takes a tremendous amount of creativity and hard work and luck to make it. You know, and if we can provide information that helps make that process easier for people, great. But we get it. We get how hard it is. We've all lived it. I still play.
I still see you. I see you up on stage every once in a while. I check you out on Instagram and see some fiddle shots every once in a while.
And yeah, now that, you know, now that my daughter's, you know, playing violin too, and you know, figuring that out, I mean, it hits really close to home. This is something I care deeply about, I guess, is the message I want to get across. And I do this job with a great deal of humility and pride, frankly. I know that's an interesting mix, but I mean, I'm so incredibly proud to have gotten the opportunity to do this job. It's not one I want to waste. And I think given the support I've been given from Governor Abbott and his whole team, we can do some amazing things. And while the programs I'm talking through sound bureaucratic, and they definitely sound like they're couched in economic development terms, the ultimate goal of all of these things is to make Texas an easier place, or at least a more supportive place, for people who are trying to create great music in our state. You know, that should be the ultimate outcome of all of this, is that people feel they live and work in a supportive environment. They don't feel like they've got to go somewhere else to do it. They feel like it'll be honored and respected and fought for here. And certainly that's what we try to bring to the office every day.
Definitely. Are you still getting to do a little recording at home and stuff? Keep scratching the itch a little bit during quarantine?
It's fun. You know, I'll say this, early in the pandemic, when it really started heating up and we came to grips with the idea that this was going to be a much longer process than maybe anyone thought at the beginning, I was appointed to head up the committee that the overall committee is called the Strike Force, the Governor's Economic Revitalization Strike Force. But my committee that I chair is the Arts, Culture, and Entertainment Committee. So I'm serving a dual role in state government right now. I sit on the Governor's Strike Force or Task Force, which is a extremely time intensive you know, all day, all week kind of job, and has been for 3 months at this point, going on 4 months at this point. So between that and my duties trying to make sure, and I don't have to worry too much about my guys at the music office. They're very much self-starters, very much aware of, you know, their jobs and what they need to do to move their roles forward. But overseeing that and then overseeing my committee on the strike force, which is an incredibly time intensive thing, like I said, it hadn't left me with too much time for my creative side. But I tracked a song for Shiny Ribs at the beginning of this deal, which was a lot of fun. And I don't know if any of you have seen Nate Kuhn's home sessions he's been doing with. Those are just really fun. And I've gotten to do a few of those. And, you know, occasionally I'll set up the Pro Tools rig at the house and just put an idea down so I make sure I can still do it. But it hadn't left me with a ton of time for anything like that. This is very much two full-time jobs running in parallel, plus, you know, home and family to look after while we're all here together. So hopefully in better times, I'll get to go do some more shows with friends. And, you know, the last show I played was end of February, maybe February 28th at Terminal 5 in New York with Pat and Randy Rogers and Josh Abbott. And had I known that it would have been the last live show I was going to play for I don't know how long, I might have taken some more mental images of it. But, you know, that was the last time I got to be on stage to do that, along with so many others. And I certainly do miss it. I feel so grateful that Pat in particular has continued to invite me to come do shows whenever it's convenient. That adds up to maybe 5 or 10 shows a year with them. But it sure is a part of the business I miss, is the live playing. And I'm sure I'm grateful to them for allowing me to do it. And I hope that eventually we get back to a point where we can do things like that again.
Definitely. Creatives will continue being creative, and we'll get through this one way or the other.
We will, absolutely. It's important for people in my position. It's important for people in city government and state government to make sure that we don't forget that the music industry is extremely important for many reasons in our state, and that we put all of our brain power and effort behind trying to find ways to save it, and to advocate for it, and to work with our local partners to make sure that we can do anything within our power not to get in its way as it tries to recover for very certain, but possibly to support it in ways that we haven't in the past.
Very cool. Well, thank you for hopping on. I won't take up too much more of your time. You sound like you've got a very full schedule. So I do appreciate you carving out an hour to spend with us here on The Rise. And we'll link all of our audience to the Texas Music Office and make sure they can get connected with you there. And hopefully we'll catch up with you before too long in person.
Yeah, well, I sincerely appreciate it. Thanks so much for all the effort you put in on these podcasts. They're great. Like I said, I've loved listening to them, and I'm sure I'm proud to be a part, and thanks for having me on.
Sounds great. Thanks.
All right. See ya.
When's the last time I checked out? Too cool for a mountain. Only time that I'm stressed out. What a way I want to step out. How they look when I walk in a room, when I talk how I do.